Welcome to this podcast from the Medical Journal of Australia. My name is Sam Hunt, the MJA's news and online editor. Thank you for your company today. So today we're discussing how general practitioners can help women improve their self-compassion to reduce depression, especially for women in midlife, aged between 40 and 60. We'll also cover the stigma around menopause. All this was covered in new research, which is summarized in Insight Plus, which describes ways women can build self-compassion to adopt a kinder, less self-critical attitude to the self. You can read that article in the description of this podcast. And this is all drawing on research published in Climateric. Let's bring in one of the authors who worked on the research, Dr. Lydia Brown. Dr. Brown, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Sam. It's a pleasure to be here.
Dr. Brown, you're a senior lecturer in clinical psychology at the University of Melbourne. Before we dive into your recent research, can you please give me a little bit about your background and your passion for this topic?
Sure. So I completed my PhD on self-compassion and menopause back in 2015. And my research, as well as my clinical practice, really since then, has been around understanding healthy aging and especially menopause. Aging and physical symptoms and illness are all universal. It's part of what it means to be human. And I'm really interested in how some people are better able to cope with the changes and challenges of illness, symptoms, and aging than others. And I look at psychological resilience factors that might explain or might help people adjust to some of these challenges of aging. Definitely a topic close to my heart.
Now, let's turn to your research, which looked at ways women can build self-compassion to adopt a kinder, less self-critical attitude towards the self. For our audience who may not be aware, what is self-compassion?
Sure. So self-compassion involves treating yourself with the same kindness that you might extend to a good friend, especially in times of difficulty when you need kindness the most. And a lot of us know what to say to a good friend if they've made a mistake or if they're sick. The compassion comes naturally, but people can struggle. And in fact, especially women, research shows, with bending that kindness back inwards and directing it towards themselves. They can sometimes treat themselves more like an enemy than a good friend. So scientifically, self-compassion has been researched since 2002 when Kristin Neff first developed the self-compassion scale to measure self-compassion. And through that process of scale development, she found that it has three key ingredients. So self-kindness, mindfulness, and common humanity. So self-kindness is about treating yourself with kindness in your thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. Mindfulness is, in the context of self-compassion, is about being aware of moments of suffering and with perspective rather than ignoring suffering, repressing it, or being consumed and overwhelmed by it. And common humanity involves seeing suffering as an opportunity to connect us to others rather than feeling isolated or alone. So to give an example, insomnia is common during menopause. I also experience it a bit in late pregnancy, being 38 weeks pregnant. So last night I woke up in the middle of the night and remembered about self-compassion. So self-kindness is stopping that kind of inner dialogue of self-criticism and, oh, why am I not sleeping? You know, what am I doing wrong? Why is my body failing me? Instead thinking, this is a moment of suffering. May I be kind to myself? The mindfulness is encapsulated there too, because it's about actually catching the negative self-talk and being able to ground yourself back in the moment. And then common humanity. So rather than feeling like you're the only person in the world up at 3 a.m. not being able to sleep, common humanity might involve thinking about all those other people around the world who might also be in your situation and that you're not alone in your experience. So that's a bit about self-compassion. And then our research has especially applied this construct to healthy aging and adjustment to health issues in the second half of life.
And in the context of your research, what age are you considering midlife?
So often people define midlife as starting at age 40, so 40 to 60, but there's a bit of variance. Some people might say 45 to 65. So in our research, we've used the frame 40 to 60. And for women, this is the time when women typically experience the menopause transition and menopause.
And let's talk about your findings. One of your key findings was that higher levels of baseline self-compassion can really make a big difference in overcoming depression.
Yeah, that's right. So midlife is a busy time for people of all genders. There are a lot of stresses. You might be managing stresses relating to growing children, as well as caregiving responsibilities for parents and the older generation. You may have growing seniority at work, so work pressures. So there's a lot going on socially. And also, you know, bodies change over the midlife period. So for women, the menopause transition involves physical changes, hormone changes, although research is mixed about effects of those on mental health, but they can certainly contribute in some cases. Women in the midlife range are the most likely to be hospitalised for depression, and Australia One study found. So, you know, it can be a risk factor, this midlife period, for depression. But at the same time, not everybody develops depression in midlife. And so we were interested to see if self-compassion might explain over time why some women might be protected and experience fewer symptoms of depression compared to others who are perhaps lower on self-compassion. And that is what we found. So we found that self-compassion longitudinally predicted depressive symptoms in Australian women measured 5 years later. So in other words, self-compassion appears to be a type of protective factor that could possibly reduce the risk of developing depression over time at midlife.
Now, you mentioned in your Insight Plus article that some doctors may fear talking about self-compassion because that may prompt unhealthy behaviours, where you believe the opposite is the case. Can you unpack that for me?
That's right. So there are a lot of myths and misconceptions about self-compassion. People think that self-compassion may relate to selfishness, putting yourself above other people, or that it might lead to self-indulgence. So not worrying about a healthy diet because you're supposedly being kind to yourself. But that's really not what self-compassion is. So self-compassion is a bit like being a good running coach. So a running coach wants you to be the best runner that you can be, wants you to help you reach your potential. But if you do fall over and sprain your ankle, the running coach won't berate you for that or criticise you for that. They will do whatever they can to support you to stand up again and get back on your feet in due course. And so that's right. The research shows that those high on self-compassion tend to be more motivated to bounce back after a setback or a personal failure, whereas those low on self-compassion are more likely to give up or spiral into, you know, negative self-talk, which really doesn't help them to move forward.
And speaking of self-compassion, we know from the literature that women have lower levels of self-compassion than men.
So a meta-analysis which combines data from multiple studies has found that women do tend to have slightly lower self-compassion levels than others. So again, we're so, you know, well-trained since childhood to be kind to other people and compassionate towards others. But there, you know, there can be a bit of a barrier or a block, to, especially for women, towards being kind towards herself.
And of course, general practitioners have a big role to play here in helping women build self-compassion. What kind of things could they do?
So the first thing to bear in mind is that self-compassion is a learnable skill. So a gold standard training course. The field is quite new, so more research is needed. But the initial randomized controlled trial looked at an 8-week self-compassion training course. And through learning skills, you are able to train your heart and your brain to be kinder towards yourself. So it's a learnable skill. And how can we support people to build this skill? In a short 15-minute medical appointment, it might even be just paying attention to any self-critical language that a patient might have, like, oh, my body's failing me, or oh, why do I have to, you know, have this problem? I'm so hopeless. So any kind of self-critical thinking, we don't want to sort of berate the patient for that, but more with curiosity say, oh, I see that you're treating yourself quite harshly there. How could you be a bit kinder towards yourself, or your physical body in that moment? So even a short question. You can also direct clients to resources to learn more about self-compassion. So Kristen Neff's selfcompassion.org website has a lot of free resources and practices to help build that skill as well. For more one-on-one intensive training, you know, you could perhaps consider a referral to a psychologist who has expertise in this area. So yeah, there are broad things that clinicians can do. The last I would say is to also try to practice the skill yourself. So especially those with perfectionistic standards, often we can be quite self-critical. So just pay attention to how you as a clinician treat yourself the next time that you make a small mistake. And if you do notice any self-critical thinking, don't beat yourself up about it, but think, oh, well, what would I tell a friend in this moment to help train your own brain to be kinder towards yourself?
And what is that address again for those free resources?
Sure. So it's selfcompassion.org, and that's Kristen Neff. So she is an academic based in the United States who first developed self-compassion and the co-developer of the self-compassion training program.
And let's turn now to stigma around menopause. I understand some women may internalize menopause. How vital is it that women are open about it and seek support?
Sure. So, you know, there absolutely is a lot of societal stigma and misconceptions about menopause. And there are historical reasons for that. You know, it's got a bit of a dark history in a way of being a source of shame or something not spoken about. Research in the area has been quite confusing, and even clinical guidelines governing practice around menopause treatment can be confusing for clinicians as well, with mixed information. So it has been a bit of a sort of a black spot, I think, in medicine for this reason. People I've heard said is menopause is the space where ageism and misogyny collide. That thankfully is changing, and women are feeling free to have more open conversations about menopause. But I think as clinicians, it's really our job to help sort of change the stigma by really listening to women in our practice and understanding that there has a lot of stress in this area, and we need to do what we can to correct that through our work and our research.
Well said. So your research finding that women can build that self-compassion to adopt a kinder, less self-critical attitude towards the self. So would you say that self-compassion really is an insurance policy?
Now look, self-compassion can be seen as an insurance policy because we all have hiccups in life. Nothing goes according to plan. Suffering is a part of life. So rather than having to avoid suffering or try to narrow our lives in order to sort of protect ourselves, self-compassion can embolden us to really reach our potential because we can take risks. And if we fail along the way, we have the psychological resources to support ourselves through that experience. Yeah, I see it as a great psychological insurance policy.
Dr. Lydia Brown, thank you so much for joining me.
Great. Thanks, Sam.
My special guest today has been Dr. Brown, a senior lecturer in clinical psychology at the University of Melbourne. You can read her article in Insight Plus about building self-compassion by clicking the link in the description of this podcast. You can find more podcasts on our website at mja.com.au or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for joining me.